Okay, so the recording is on. Thank you everybody for coming in. This is our weekly or bi-weekly AI and Metaverse Task Force meeting. And welcome everybody to join the call. And I guess Wenjing, if you want to kick off from here, please go ahead. Or Wenjing, I see you're muted. Just let me know, do you want to have me
Okay,
go down the
yeah,
agenda?
I can.
No, go ahead if you can. So just continue
Sure,
as much
yeah.
as you can. Yeah.
So just a quick notice, like I have to jump into a call very soon, so I want to just take a few minutes, go over the agenda. Oops, that's not the agenda. Okay, so you can you display the agenda page? Essentially today, the ones I prepared anyway was pretty simple. So we have three items or three deliverables. One is a blog post and potentially two white papers that started last time. And then there are two topics after that. So we want to hear basically where we are on those three white papers, see if we can get an update. And then the two items I put on. One of them, since Mary's here, is ChatGPT in education. So I was hoping Mary would jump in and then give us a little bit of a direct experience how that is happening. So that's one thought that's really useful item. And I will prepare a little bit of a video from the Stanford group, which are also doing talking about same topic, in case she couldn't join this time. So, if Mary, you could cover that, that'd be awesome. And then, if you roll down, I think I put on another topic, which is oh yeah. So in the last meeting, there's people asked me to look at how can whether we could use GPT-4 to understand consent. Like I have to sign up on digital service, and they all asked me to sign a bunch of agreement on term of use and whether the chatbot can help me understand that document better. So I go went there and try that. I will be happy to report back the experience I had. And that's the prepared agenda. See if anyone want to make changes or any other additions we want to talk about.
No, thanks. I think you can see the screen, right? You can see the agenda
Yes.
on the screen.
Yes.
Okay. So, and I think we would just kind of like, if you just want to go back to the starting of this. So we started recording here, but I think we can like, I think it's all the same people. So, but just for the sake of recording, we can just go over the antitrust
Antitrust
policy and
policy
yeah.
and the TOIP's IPR policy. Yes.
Correct. Right, so I think we can
And
skip over that.
we're following the policy of technical stack. Is that called technology stack working group?
Correct.
Yes.
Right. So
Yeah,
I think
great.
since there's nobody new in the group today, so I guess we can go past that. I don't think there's any new members in the new introductions today, I guess. So we can go
Claire has her
past.
hand up. I have my hand up just very quickly. I don't want to take up time, but
No, go
Mary,
ahead.
I'm not sure. Have we been formally or informally introduced? I don't
Yes,
believe so. We
we
haven't.
did hear from you, Claire, last 2 weeks ago.
And I was in London, so I didn't attend last week. Yes.
Correct.
Go ahead, Claire, if you could make an introduction again.
Okay, thank you very much. So just quickly, I'm Claire Nelson. I'm the new executive director for the Decentralized Identity Foundation.
Oh, yay.
Okay, very nice to
Yay.
meet you. Thank you for coming. I love when we connect across different communities, Claire. That's fantastic. And Thank
I'm
you.
an outlier. I'm a professor at in the Walton College of Business at the University of Arkansas, and I study self-sovereign identity and blockchains and Web3 and other emerging technologies. So I've been engaged. We're a founding member of the Trust Over IP Foundation. So I've been engaged in different working groups since the beginning.
Excellent. Nice to meet you, Mary.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mary's recent paper I saw was awesome. it's I'm happy to see that
Trust over IP's work has some, positive contribution to your work. That's great. And we really enjoy Mary's really deep thought in these two topics here we have in this task force.
Thank you. Thank you, Mary, and thank you, Claire. Wenjing, I think since you need to hop off earlier in only a few minutes, do you want to go over your piece here and on item number three?
Sure. And I can do quite quickly. So,
yeah, please go ahead.
Give me a second. All right. So let me open this up here and then share screen. Okay, if you could stop sharing for I think for a little while. And then I can stop. Okay. So basically, this is the I had an outline of the white paper before, and in the last 2 weeks, did a little bit of research and reorganized on the topic. So basically, this current layout look like this. So this is the title called Digital Trust in the Age of ChatGPT. And the abstract didn't change much. And on the layout, I thought I'll have basically one section, more introductions. So this is the age of, you know, ChatGPT, which is basically a bit of introductory things about, you know, what's going on. And in case people are not familiar with it, we have some warming up. And that's the first one. Then the rest of the document currently is organized as three questions. A is, can we trust ChatGPT, or what does that mean? So that this section goes into rethinking digital trust. It's essentially we go back to like what we think defined as trust and see if we go, you know, revisit by through the principles, starting from the principles, and see how we end up, right, with this new phenomenon. Does that the definition still work well for us? And then we go into, say, evaluate different areas, essentially, while we discover maybe new. And so one of the area would be you ask question, you get a feedback, you get an answer. And currently, you, the person who asked question, have to validate or have some sense of evaluating whether you do to trust it or not, because sometimes it can be completely wrong. And also, like, you know, the other factors on this. So we will have to deal with not just formality, as in the sign of a document, stuff like that, rather than the veracity of the content itself. So we naturally are in the semantics layer, not in the lower layer, right? And so that is it's a question. I thought that would be basically, we will explore in this question, basically, how do I evaluate? What does it mean? How much do I trust it? What do I need to know so that I can evaluate and know, you know, wisely use the outcome in my work? So that's that bullet. And then there's another common issue, would it be the, I guess it's your existing issue, right? How do you tell a human and a piece of software apart? And, you know, this makes quite a lot harder. And so this is another area we'd like to go explore. And then there are a whole bunch of risks, which actually the OpenAI paper, recent one, had summarized them. So I was just looking at it, see if I can summarize or make them a little bit easier to read, I guess. So that risks, currently I've organized them into privacy, bias, adversarial use, and over-reliance. But, you know, this whole list can change a bit. But this whole section basically go into, can we trust these things? And what does that really mean, trust means? So this is the overall answer to that question. And the other two sections, I haven't actually gotten into too much into it yet. But basically, once we know, you know, these are the risks, or these are the new challenges we have to face, right? And then I would ask, you know, will existing tools still be effective? And so that will probably come down to look at the trust over IP stack or architecture, or even more general, right? And see, does these tools answer that those questions? And if not, then have some thought, share some thought on how should we proceed So that's the whole white paper currently structured, and very much want to hear your feedback, whether this look good before I jump into into finishing off, you know, most of the content. And also I want to, of course, invite co-authors and contributors to help me get some of this done. It does look a little bigger than I started with, but you know, that's what I end up with so far.
Okay, should I share a little bit before
yes,
you
please.
Run? Mentioning?
Yes.
So, we've been having lots of conversations about this, as you can imagine, on college campuses, but I've been studying the adoption of artificial intelligence for 10 years. And to me, this is a democratizing egalitarian tool. So you look at its capabilities are about as good as the $20 to $40 million Watson tools that we initially had.
Yeah.
So to me, that's a point that has to be, I think it is important as far as a potential value to society, that it kind of creates this equal playing field. You don't have to have these multi-million dollar investments to access it. I'm just going to ramble a couple of other things.
Sure.
As far as trusting ChatGPT, I trust it to produce the most common answer based on a trained data set. That's what you can trust it to do. It goes to the means and the modes. And as far as the bias, there's a really cool project that my colleague is doing here, Professor Dan Conway, where he looked at, for example, ChatGPT was trained on Twitter data, and the average Twitter person is a male in their 30s. So his idea is that we have a robotic that we set up multiple instantiations, and we purposely will populate some of those instantiations with a diverse or inclusive data set, a subset. Then you ask all of your robot army the same question, and you look at the frequency distribution, because some questions you want to know the norm, but sometimes if it's you want to know the outliers, like, does this message coming over look suspicious, right? So it depends on the research questions you have, but I love the idea of getting around the biases by purposefully having specific instantiations that look or are trained only on a designed inclusive data set. So that was one comment, you know, for moving forward, you know, that might go in there. And then evaluating it, one of the things that people need to get in the habit is always ask ChatGPT to cite the top five sources it relied on the most to generate the answer. Because that's what we do in our class. And you can go, look, you know, is this a legitimate source that it's based on? So I think the behavioral change that I'm trying to instill in our students. It's fine. This is a tool. Use it. It's a great starting place. You can start essays with this. You can start, but you have to cite it as a source, just like you would cite Wikipedia or the Oxford English Dictionary. And then don't just take it at face value, just like you make assessments in a Google search. Right? You do a Google search, you get lots of responses, and you're making an assessment. Which site do I want to click on that I trust? So those are some of my, I'll shut up, but those are some of the things that kind of stand out when I looked at the outline of your paper.
Great. Thank you. And do you have in terms of the content itself, would you see these reasonable, does it cover like the really important things I think the community may want to hear from?
Yes, I do. I'm just trying to think, you know, you don't want to have the biggest scope.
yeah, we definitely wouldn't be able to go very, very deep technically. It's just, you know, not that the type of paper we're talking about. And also the scope, I want to basically see if it is quite relevant to, you know, our community readers are interested in these questions. I'm sure they're interested in many others, but whether these capture that most of the people in their mind or users or policymakers, you know, our main audience, right? Will this be the main question they have?
I do. Instead of can we trust ChatGPT, I would suggest this. Instead of asking the question, it's what can I trust ChatGPT to do? Because I think we have that as a better answer, right? You may not want it, you know, diagnosing your your health without a doctor implementing, but is it a starting place? Like, what do we trust it for? And I think that's why I started off with, I trust ChatGPT to give me the most frequent example, the most mode response based on the training data right. set as cited by its top five sources.
Right, right. That makes perfect sense. That's what I had intended to. But if you make it a can we chat becomes a binary, we are really not talking about binary.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Great.
Well, good job. Thank you for leading this.
Well, all right. If I may just quickly add on to this thread right here, I think it might be helpful to see what Bard and ChatGPT and other similar tools basically say. Like, if we ask that tool to basically say, okay, I want to write this essay, help me with a starting point, just like Mary said, that can we actually ask either Google Bard or ChatGPT to actually ask for this very essay? And let's see what points the tool itself recommends.
Right. So basically, for example, going through a working example.
Well, no, not just a working example. I'm saying basically, essentially asking ChatGPT the same question, like, okay, what topic should I include in writing about? Should ChatGPT be trusted or not?
I see.
And similarly, so, in Google Bard, which is obviously from Google, what should be the subtopics included in that thing, and then we see what topics does that come up with. So we can basically include that as part of the research. So it's like, as we're writing this, say we're writing that about the tool, we ask the tool itself, and why can we trust a ChatGPT?
Okay. So I'm going to just jot some notes for myself. But basically, I think a lot to do with like how you do. People say prompt engineering, or basically how you ask the question or the prompt, write the prompt right. properly in the right way so that you get the result you want.
Right. Well, yeah. No, I'll just run some samples. Like, for example, people want different prompts with ChatGPT in terms of different kind of questions. And like we all understand that it essentially really comes back based on trained data. So now the question is, if it comes back with the trained data, so what are the potential dangers of trusting ChatGPT, for example, stuff like mm-hmm. that. So we can, kind of have some of those questions and see what results it comes back with and what citations it comes back with.
Okay. Yeah. The question directly. Okay. Yeah. Got it. Yeah. Thank you. And Claire. Oh, you're muted.
Thank you. So what I have to add came up in a trust over IP meeting yesterday. Mm-hmm. And Judith, I think you were there. Dan, I can't recall. But I'm repeating something from Drummond. This is not new for me. So he assigned all of us homework. And it was a video to watch called The AI Dilemma. And it features Tristan Harris and some others from the Center for Humane Technology. I'd never heard of that organization before. But I'll post the link to the video here. It came from Drummond. When Drummond assigns homework, I usually take that to heart. And so I listened to I watched the video. And it could be another reference for your paper. And some of the takeaways would be in the category of adversarial risk.
Okay. Great.
So it's from Drummond. I'm just passing along. Please don't attribute anything. Yeah, because he was the one that, yeah.
Of course.
But thank you. Yeah.
All right. Thank you. I think I want to jump off now. I will probably come back on the phone, let's say 10 minutes later. But please carry on. Thank you, Sandy.
Yeah, no, thank you.
And thank you, everyone. And hopefully I can come back soon. Thank you.
Sure, no problem. All right, I'm going to go ahead and share my screen then just to continue with this. Okay. I don't think if we have Phil in the call today. So I'm on item number two here. I think we just went over item number one and with Wenjing and Mary. I'm not sure if I don't see Phil in the call today, so we can probably skip this update today. The main update I have from my paper here, basically there's no, well, actually I was not able to make real updates in the actual paper itself, which I'm still working on in the sidelines. But primarily I've been reaching out to different game studios and game developers, and I'm starting to reach out to their tech teams to basically like see if I can get some like official citations in terms of exactly how they manage identity and payments in their systems. Like basically, for example, let's say by Ubisoft or by you know, by Steam or any of those other guys. And basically, instead of just doing the generic research, find it out from the actual folks who actually run identity. In fact, I also reached out to folks in Microsoft. I haven't heard back from that specific Xbox team yet, but I do have a bunch of interviews lined up or slash you know, discussion calls. We call them interviews yet, where the what a few different folks over the last over the next few days, because there was a GDC conference, like a game developers conference, going on and. In San Francisco last week, so a lot of people were unavailable, but I'm hoping to get in touch with a bunch of people in the next few days. In fact, I have one call tonight, then one tomorrow, and I'll keep ourselves posted here. But finally, what I'm really doing in this paper, just as a way very quick recap, is looking into what is the current landscape in terms of gaming, like in the gaming industry, for identity and payments, and how they really make it happen. And like, if we have to use decentralized forms of identity and payment, how can we get there? Like that gets into the whole conversation about like when we talk about payments, like whether can we use stable coins, can we use something else, eventually can we use CBDCs in there, or anything like this. Basically, like, how do we really use digital money? How can we enable peer-to-peer or avatar-to-avatar payments eventually, going through the concepts of identity? So I think that's the main update I have here. Dan, actually, I would just quickly, you know, put you on the spot for a sec. This is something I'm going to definitely speak to you more about, because I know you are obviously an SME in biometrics, and also very much thank you for taking time to speak to me a few days ago. Just as an FYI, I was in a Hyperledger Basic conference just a few days ago on 21st and 22nd of March, and ran into a whole bunch of other Accenture colleagues from you, including David, and but like that name of everybody, but basically a whole bunch of people over there. And they, of course, seem to know you very well. We'll basically be in touch with some of the other Accenture folks in this specific context today. So I'll probably ping you back as I make any progress, or as I also speak to other folks in Accenture.
Yeah, sure. Happy to contribute what I can. Yeah.
Thank you, Dan. Okay. And I think I saw Judith come in, but I think then she left. I'm not sure she intended to be in the meeting, but I was trying to ask her if, like, in terms of like if you have overlap in the paper in terms of the different you know, different entities within LF. So I guess as long as we don't really run into any IPR, I think should be okay. But I'm waiting for the result on my mentorship project request that I've submitted at Hyperledger. And as soon as I get an answer on that, I think that's supposed to come out in the next couple of days, or maybe in the first week of April. I will be able to have a better answer as to, like, the mentorship project submitted at Linux, at Hyperledger under MSIG, if we can basically have like a collaborative effort between, you know, different entities. And in fact, I just want to also mention one more thing. I had also reached out to the gaming subgroup and at W3C, and there's also an interest from people over there. There's a gaming community over there, and there's also an interest from people there to basically collaborate with the Linux Foundation people or anybody working at Linux Foundation. So if there's an interest from any of us or any of you guys to basically have that joint meeting, please let me know and I can propose a joint meeting. I think it might be helpful. So maybe if we can.
Hey, Sandy, count me in. That's something that DIF is doing in a big way. We're reaching out to the other Linux Foundation groups. Sure. FinOS is one. Automotive Grade Linux is another. There are dozens of Linux Foundation groups with either a vertical or a technical focus. Mm-hmm. And that's a step we haven't taken in the past to leverage our Linux Foundation brothers and sisters, if you will. Mm-hmm. So yeah, big vote, big thumbs up for that.
Oh, sounds great. And if I may request that, maybe we can just quickly run a quick scheduling, voting thing as to what time works for everybody through a Slack.
That's a tough one. Yeah.
Right. Because if I have to fix, like, I have to basically propose some time. Like, I think I'm looking at my emails. I think they had proposed sometimes in the first week of April. I can just copy and paste that in Slack and see what time works for everybody. I just want to make sure I don't end up committing to any time which is inconvenient for our members here. So maybe I'll just, post that up on Slack, and please everybody can just take a look at that and see what time seems to work everybody, like conveniently for everybody.
Sandy, do they have a standard time that they meet? Because we're not that many people. It might just be easier if they invite us to one of their meetings, if they have more people than we have.
Interestingly, what's happening though is that in W3C, just for the sake of clarity, so they really have two kind of work groups. They have a work group thing, which is basically officially the standard making body. Then they have the community groups. Community groups are basically just volunteers, people working in, but they're not really officially making any standards. And now I know you're talking about the standard time, not the standards itself.
Yeah.
I understand that. But basically, what seems to be happening is that this community group was not very, very active over the last year. So there was a cushion going on. Like I had also volunteered myself to be part of the community group. So there was a cushion from the moderators as to should we continue with the group or not. So a few folks voted back and said that, yes, we should continue with the community group. And then I replied back saying that, we also have some sort of work going on in the LF. So then they responded back saying, okay, well, can we basically just have some collaborative effort and see if we can also keep the group alive at W3C and we can collaborate across LF and W3C. So in a sense, I'm sorry for the long answer, but in a sense, they don't really have any standard time. I think they just proposed a bunch of different slots. I can just share that on Slack and let's see what works for everybody. Right. Or better yet, I can just, as I email them back, I can just loop you all in as a part of that. And this way we can all chime in. Okay, I'll do that. Awesome. Okay, so then I think going to the next topic here, I believe we can skip, or we can probably, because I think we've already spoken about this a little bit. Mary, I don't know if you want to talk more about this specific thing as to ChatGPT in classrooms, or it's up to you.
Well, I just described how I use it. But I'll just say more generally, because we've had some campus-wide meetings here, and some of the, I'm a technologist, so, I don't have positions like banned technology that's fully accessible to the world, but some of my colleagues across campus, especially in the, the English department, we're very concerned about this. So as a first step, our campus, our academic integrity office, they're the ones that investigate all the cheating, said, well, we have this thing called, we have all of this plagiarism software. So now they're just asking, give us your exams, give us your assignments, and we'll load up ChatGPT's answer, because then the plagiarism software will find it. So that's an example of an emerging practice that that we have on campus. But it was interesting because we had a town hall, and I thought, oh, I better go. And every faculty was asked, what are you most afraid of? And everyone was like, I'm afraid students will never write again. I'm afraid, all the big fears. And I said, my only fear is that you will ban it. That's my fear. So I'm here to stop it. But they didn't have that position at all. They see it as a tool, like, Wikipedia is a tool. So I was happy about that. The other interesting thing as an academic, of course, we also do research. I'm seeing increasingly our academic journals are coming out with policies on ChatGPT that says it cannot be a co-author. Isn't that interesting? But you can use it, but you have to cite it like you would cite any other source. So apparently some ingenious faculty members were asking ChatGPT to write an academic article and submitting it with them as a co-author.
I find it very interesting because I think it's the same thing that we were saying. Hey, let's ask ChatGPT or Bard as to how do you write an essay about can we trust one of these AI engines?
Yeah, but we would cite it. That's the difference, right?
Yeah,
we're saying we asked ChatGPT. This is ChatGPT's answer. We're not making it, you know, part of the authoring team.
Yeah. No, and I totally agree. And I think it's going to be very interesting to see how the plagiarism thing kind of lines up because I don't know, like, because theoretically, the answer that you're going to get from the engine is going to differ quite a bit, like, unless it's going to come back with the exact same thing. And then you can easily say, it's like, oh, you took the exact same thing. So your answer is actually plagiarized. So it's going to be interesting how this whole thing evolves. So I totally agree. I think it's a very, very uncharted territory in terms of how much you can trust, you know, how many citations can truly come out, how much of this is just ChatGPT thinking from its trained answers and things like that. Okay. And of course, I think we'll update some of the comments here. I'm not really doing this right now, but of course, some of these comments here or notes were from last week. Maybe this is just Wenjing making some comments, but you're very well in the meeting today. so we'll update these. I think that's about it today. I don't think I have much more today. And my apologies. You guys might be hearing my dog on in the background. I had to leave him downstairs. But no, go ahead. Anybody, please go ahead. Floor is yours. Anything you want to add in there?
Always happy to get 20 minutes back.
Okay.
All right. Perfect. Thank you so much, Sandy. Appreciate it. Nice to meet you, Claire. Good to see you, Dan.
Thanks, everyone.
You too. Thank you. See you soon.
Thanks, everybody.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.